Geraint Wyn Davies is a Welsh-Canadian actor who has starred in numerous plays, movies, and television shows since his debut in 1977. We met Mr. Davies in September of 2023 and completely lost our minds. After we came to, we had one goal in mind: watch everything he has ever been in so that next time we're ready. How has this man made a career out of making out on screen? Will this be enough to help us make it through the next meeting, still conscious? This isn't a podcast. It's an inoculation. I am Rachel.
And I'm Meg. And this is Gare Can Get It. This week, we get almost sex electrocuted in Newfoundland. What?
Ba-da-tsh.
I'm like a little proud of myself for that.
I mean, that was really good, actually. Yeah.
I know. Thank you.
If they gave awards for makeouts on screen or stage, this guy would get a lifetime achievement. He'll find any excuse to get right to suck and face. You honestly wouldn't believe it. Dissecting each and every kiss with tongue. There's only one conclusion to come to. It's that Gare can get it.
So we will be discussing a TV show called Republic of Doyle. We're talking about season 2, episode 7, Crashing on the Couch. It's from 2011. And Gare plays a character called Professor Calvin Sullivan.
What is he a professor of? A doctor of love.
That, I feel like that is his academic title outside of the TV show. I feel like in the TV show, I think he's supposed to be an English professor. But, like, they sketch him in just barely enough to, like, show that he's a human man who writes books, basically. So, but it's set in Newfoundland. It's about a father and son who are PIs who work together, and both of them used to be police officers. And I don't know the circumstances that lead to them not being cops and becoming PIs, because it's not one of those shows where the pilot, like, sets up all the pieces for you and then the show, like, moves forward from there. It really starts in medias res. Race? I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been in school and learned Latin words.
In the middle of shit.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the Vulgate translation, right?
So happy to provide it.
So it's got a father and son. We've got dad Malachi and son Jake Doyle. And the show is just kind of, it's like a case of the week. So the other sort of main theme, which feels very Gare appropriate, is that the character of Jake Doyle, so he's in Newfoundland. So, like, for American and international listeners, just basically mentally hear an Irish accent, because that's basically what a Newfoundland accent is. So just, like, mentally picture a smaller Canadian Colin Farrell, and, like, that's kind of the vibe he gives off. So he's like,
yeah, he kind of looks like him too.
This poor actor. He's handsome. He's fine. I just, you know, he's like little Colin Farrell.
Yeah, clearly, because he's fucking like four women.
That's my point. So, like, this show, I feel like it's appropriate to our Gare interest, because the main character, like, cannot choose a woman. There are so many, and he, like, can't figure it out. So we're introduced to, he has an ex-wife who is a doctor, and she pops up for like a couple of minutes, and they, in the pilot, they seemed like they had, like, an antagonistic relationship, but, like, by the time we get to season 2, they're, like, old buddies, and she seems to like him. So there's that. Then there's a lady lawyer that he's interested in and, like, wants to date. And then there's also a female cop that he's interested in and wants to date, but, like, the female cop, she's dating the mayor, I think, is who she's dating. But, like, it's one of those, like, I want to be with you, but I can't because I'm with somebody else. Like, one of those. So there are three separate women that he, like, anytime we're not dealing with the Gare plot, he is going on a date or trying to go on a date or, like, thinking about going on a date with these women. And I was like, wow, like, this feels very appropriate to the whole vibe of this podcast. This feels, like, directly on brand. So I like it for that reason. So, like, thumbs
fair.
Up. But, like... Right? And then we have the dad character who's married to a much, much younger woman. And that keeps getting repeated. And I was like, also appropriate for a Gare TV show. Thumbs up. Good job. I feel like I understand why he was like, I am called to this episode. I must be a part of it. Like, I get. Good job. So we've got the dad, Malachi, with his much younger wife, Rose. And then, as we mentioned 2 weeks ago, I think it'll be 2 weeks when this airs, the actor Nicholas Campbell, who was one of the main characters in Diamonds, he plays a character called Martin Poole, and he is Rosie's ex-husband, and he's, when I was watching it, I was thinking he was maybe like a mobster. Wikipedia just describes him as a criminal. So he's like some guy with a criminal past.
He is the con artist of some kind.
Con artist. Yeah. So yeah. That's kind of the vibe he gives off with his like extremely oversized leather jacket and indeterminate accent. He pops up and his whole thing is, I was a jerk to all of the main characters in the past and I have now come into some money. Don't worry how. And I like, he's trying to give money to the main characters. And like when everyone rejects him, he just like goes on to the next main character. Like he's like this weird, creepy mobster Santa Claus, like trying to throw wads of cash at everyone. And you can tell by looking at the money, it's either fake money that has not been changed out of like the back of the set since like the late 80s, early 90s, or they just like used really old money. Because this is money that was not used when I was a child. So this money, this fake money is at least 30 years out of date. We've got Dad's Hot Young Wife. We've got Jake Doyle and the three women that he's maybe going to sleep with that he hasn't slept with in the past. We've got Jake's brother who has a really impressive ponytail, and he runs the local bar because that's, you need the ponytail to run the bar.
Yeah.
So one of the plots is that the brother has taken out money from a loan shark, to put down the down payment for the bar. So, that's why Rosie's ex-husband keeps coming in and trying to hand everybody money. Cause he's like, I know there's a loan shark involved. I'm going to give you this big wad of very outdated cash. And then you can pay off the loan shark and then we'll all be good and you'll forget the, I guess, terrible things I did to you in the past. So like that's like, it's very weird. Like it's very aggressive. This guy going around being like, take my money. And it's like, I don't.
Yeah, and they're all like, no. And he's like, I'm just telling you to take it. I have no strings. I just want you to take this cash. And they're like, no.
The number of times he says no strings is like, it gets creepier every time. Dude. But then Rosie makes a comment of like, I believe you. I fully, like, it's not that I think that there's secret strings. It's not that I think that you're like pulling a con. I fully believe you that there are no strings attached here. However, all of us do not want your money. And I'm like, it's very weird. Like it's very weird. And it like takes up a lot of time in the episode. But so those are the main characters and like the main things that go on. So the B plot is the loan shark going on. Then there's the C plot, which is Jake trying to figure out like which woman he wants to have sex with, and like they don't want him when he wants them, and it's very sad. So those are the B and C plots going on. Then we get to the reason that we're all here today, which is the A++ plot, which is the Gare plot. So as I said, the two main characters, they are PIs. So they're at like the porch of, it looks like a restaurant with like a wraparound porch is kind of the vibe I get. But so they're there to meet their client, which is Calvin Sullivan, novelist, a.k.a. Garrett Wendeavies.
Does he just write novels, though, Meg? What kind of novels does he write?
So the whole show, it just says that he's a novelist. And then they call him Professor Sullivan. And there's, like, an oblique comment about, like, the university. So I'm like, okay, you're, like, an English professor at a college or university somewhere. And also you write novels. So then later in the episode, you actually see the cover of one of the novels that he wrote. The novel is called Body Language. And the cover is a woman's face from like the lips down and her hands like erotically posed around, like framing her face. And I was like, I fucking love that. Like even in the set dressing, they're like, this guy's played by Garrett Wendeavies, right? Like whoever had to make the fake cover for the book was like, okay, so not like a novel about like space or like the war of 1812. And they're like, no. It's Garrett Wendeavies. So they're like, okay, so erotica, like the most erotica, the most erotic. Yes. So, so fucking much. I didn't catch it the first time. We talked a little bit about this earlier. I didn't catch it the first time. And then when we get to that scene, I paused because I was like, oh, you can actually see the cover of this book. Like, let me see what it was. And then when it was just like full on, like red lipstick drama hands, I was like, good job. You guys fucked up on the money. Like the money was old and weird, but the book cover, chef's kiss.
Perfect.
I love it. Just perfect.
Yes. He's going to wear four cardigans. Don't ask. Just don't fucking ask.
So that was literally the next thing in my notes is when we first meet Gare, he's wearing three shirts. He's never, like,
it's for us.
It's for our protection. Like, all of this was a joke, and then we started doing this podcast, and I'm like, no, it's not. This is just accurate. No. This is accurate reporting. It is not a joke. Yes. So he is wearing a kind of flannel-type button-down shirt. And on top of that is a zip-up cardigan, and it's the kind that, like, zips up all the way to the top. So he has, like, a little baby-popped collar, and I was like, good reference to the 80s, one of your better decades. Thumbs up. So popped collar, and then on top of that, like, a giant denim coat. Like, he, I know it's Canada. I know it's
so hot.
Right? I know it's Newfoundland, but, like, it appeared to be, like, at least spring. Like, if not summer, it was at least spring. So, like, even in Newfoundland, like, I know that they're, like, you're by the water and it's cold, but, like, how do you not lose 30 pounds filming in the 45 layers that you must wear at all time to protect all the women around you?
That is a lot of shirts. Yeah.
Oh, it's not just, like, shirts. It's like the thickest fabric known to man on top of the second thickest fabric known to man. Just like solid, but, like, also it's a good look and I like it. So thumbs up. Okay, so I'm not mad about it. I mean, like, I appreciate the suffering that he goes through for us. So Garrett comes out. He meets with Jake and Malachi, and Jake is, like, perma drunk, and I'm like, is that, like, a Newfoundland stereotype? Like, okay, whatever. So he comes out, and Garrett's like, I think someone's after my wife, but, like, I don't remember why he thinks the wife is in danger. Do you remember
she's
that
sick,
at all?
And then he thinks, like, she thinks it was food poisoning, and then there was one other thing, and she's like, that's just a thing that could happen, and it's something with her car, maybe. I mean, I just remember thinking, what moron thinks that that's the kind of thing that just happens?
Oh, that's the whole vibe of this episode. You have now gone so far past rationalization that you seem like a little crazy, that you're trying so hard. And, like, I know it's because she has a deep, dark secret, which we'll get to, but also at the same time, it's like, at some point, like, if six pianos nearly land on your head, like, maybe maybe something is going on. But anyway, okay, so Gare shows up. He's wearing all of his layers for our protection. We thank him very much. He's like, I think someone is trying to hurt my wife. His wife comes out and she's like, oh, you're being silly. And then we have our first characteristic where Gare immediately starts spider fingering all over her shoulder. Did you notice that? His hand immediately goes right to her.
He loves the grab from the back. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So first he's like right on the shoulder. He's like, that's my wife. And I'm like, all right, good dude. And then when the camera turns around and you can see all of a sudden his hand is on her shoulder blade. And I'm just like, good job.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, the audience has to believe that I like her, so if I liked her, I would touch her. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that.
I fucking love it. He has a skill set, and he uses it. Anyway, so he's touching her. Gare's standing there next to the wife. He's got his spider fingers all over her so that we understand that this is his property, so check. And then we get to meet the other two psychiatrists from the same practice as Dr. Jennifer Sullivan. So there's Dr. William Ng, and then there's Dr. Ellen. And she gets a last name briefly later, and it's vaguely Russian. It's sort of like Gersimov, like we had in our Diamonds episode, but, like, they basically just make fun of how they can't say it in Russian. And then, spoiler alert, it doesn't matter what her name is because that's not her real name, because she stole the name of a dead psychiatrist, and, like, nobody is adequately horrified by this. Like, I want them to be more upset.
Yeah, they're like, well.
Yeah. Oh, you stole a dead woman's name? Okay.
That's because the other doctor is inventing medication in, like, the galley kitchen. Right?
None of this makes any fucking sense. This is so okay.
He's like, I'm working on this psychotropic. And you're like, where are you working?
In my basement next to the car. It's okay. We're going to get there in, like, 3 seconds. But yes, I am horrified by this entire practice. Like, nothing good is happening. Like, what the fuck is going on in Newfoundland? Like, their psychiatric community. I'm concerned. I'm very concerned. So, we've got Dr. William Ng and Dr. Ellen, and they're both, like, doing the introduction. And they're doing the introduction for Dr. Jennifer Sullivan because she won some award where it's, like, psychiatrist of the year or some bullshit. Okay. So they're like, here's Dr. Sullivan, blah, blah, blah. Everyone claps. This show. So Dr. Sullivan gets up there, gets up to her little podium, and she's supposed to just make a couple of remarks. And she gets up there and immediately she starts, like, freaking out. Like, she's seeing things that aren't there, and she's making weird, like, gibbering noises. And she's, like, doing that thing where you're, like, laughing and then crying and then laughing and then crying. Like, she is, her panic attack is not small, I guess is how I would phrase it. It's very big.
It's very obviously chemically induced.
It's very big and it's very upsetting and it's happening very quickly. Like, there's no like gradual rise. It's like, it's here's Dr. Jennifer and she's like, ah, and I'm like, okay. So the amount of time it takes anybody to notice that this is not her prepared speech. Did you notice that? It was so weird.
They're all like, oh, that's weird. Oh, maybe. Okay. No, this. What?
Let's hear her out. Let's see what this turns into.
It takes like 60 seconds.
Yes.
Or more.
They don't panic until she falls backwards off of, there's like three little steps down to the ground. They don't panic until she flips herself backwards off those steps onto the grass. Even Gare is like, no, like he thinks that something is going on and he watches her. And then until she falls off the stage, that's when he goes, oh, I think something's wrong. Really? At this point.
She doesn't normally fall backwards like that. It's...
After screaming and pointing at people and like having hallucinations. So we get to her, like, so they pick her up off the ground. We have her opening credits. We see her in the hospital and she's like, maybe it's an interaction between my medication. Really? And Gary's like, you've clearly been poisoned. You know that thing where you like saw shit that wasn't backwards? There? I think you were poisoned.
Yeah.
You had like a full on seizure. Yeah. I think that's bad maybe. And we should figure out what's going on. And she's like, nah.
I mean, a lot happens in the middle, but Gare's not in it. He's only in the beginning and then he's at the end.
Yeah, but he's the impetus. He's the sexual impetus for this entire episode, which
sexual impetus.
So throughout the course of this episode, Dr. Sullivan is going to be nearly killed three times total. So first off, we've got her poisoned on the stage by this drug that it turns out is an LSD-like substance, which we will in 2 seconds find out is the drug that Dr. Ng is developing in his toilet somewhere, because they're not part of like a pharmaceutical lab. This is like some rando psychiatrist's office, like next to the Burger King in Newfoundland somewhere. Like, right. Okay. So she's poisoned on stage. And then later she's going to be in her office. She's going to be talking to Jake. They're about to make tea and she's like, oh, I forgot to plug the kettle in. I don't have any hot water. Can you? And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll go and plug the kettle in for you. He plugs it in and then it's sort of like Looney Tunes. Like he shoots backwards against the fucking wall. Because the plug itself, not the tea kettle, but the wall plug itself has been tampered with in such a way that like it's going to shoot out a shock strong enough to kill or like really hurt a person. But he is basically like a cartoon character. So he just takes a lick and it keeps on taking. So he's fine. But I guess it would have killed a normal person. And then at the end of the episode, she will nearly be killed by electrocution again with like, I don't even know how, it's one cable that's been like, cut in half, like jagged in half. So like each half of the cable, she can barely wrap her hand around. It is the biggest, blackest, scariest looking cable I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's also sort of comical because it's like, where did you find like transatlantic, like what the fuck were you plugging in at the psychiatrist's office?
Yeah, it's coming out of like the circuit breaker panel. Like it's inserted into the circuit breaker panel because they follow it to her. Like she pulled it out of the panel.
Yeah, what was this plug? Was the whole place running on one cable? Like, I don't know. It is cartoonishly huge. It is like, I want to know, like, did someone just like make it for the show? In which case, whatever. But like, if you didn't make it for the show, like if you had to like send the props guy out and he had to like buy it, what the fuck is that giant cable actually used for? Like you could light up an entire, you could light up the Rockefeller Christmas tree with this one cable. Yeah. It is the biggest, floppiest, blackest, electricalist thing I've ever seen. It is like, there's a lot of phallic imagery in this episode. It is crazy. But anyways, so she will nearly be electrocuted twice and she will be poisoned once. So she's having a bad time and she just refuses every time to believe that anything's going on. So Jake is like, okay, I'm going to investigate what's going on. I will pose as a patient and I'm going to go and I'll like talk to the other psychiatrists because Gare's like, they all suck. They're all terrible. They all have a reason to hate my wife. I bet it's one of those assholes. Go in and pretend to be a patient. And he's like, okay, I'm going to go in and tell everyone about all of my like lady issues. And so that'll get that off my chest. And then while I'm in there, I don't know, I guess if I can solve like an attempted murder, like whatevs, that's fine. So So first he goes in, he talks to Dr. Ellen, and Dr. Ellen is super new agey, and she's like covered in like very thin scarves. I feel like if that gives you anything of the vibe of Dr. Yeah. Ellen, and also how her name is Dr. Ellen. So she has some kind of a book that Dr. Sullivan, I guess, was asked to review, and Dr. Sullivan was like, this sucks, it's a piece of shit. So Dr. Ellen is mad about that, so we're like, oh, is that enough to kill her? And I'm like, is it enough to kill her? That seems, I mean, you couldn't think of anything better, but they will think of something better in a second. But at this point, I'm like, oh. So Jake goes in. He will eventually find out that she's not even a real psychiatrist because, as we said a minute ago, she stole a dead lady's name and credentials and just started living like a psychiatrist after flunking out of med school. And I'm like, really? We're just going to like throw that under the rug? Like we're not going to like engage with, like, we're just going to throw out like the craziest, most horrifying thing and just never engage with it ever again. No. Okay. That's fine.
It's honestly not the most worrying thing going on here.
Apparently it was for me. I mean, well, the second most, I guess after the toilet drugs, but like, first, I was like, what?
You assumed a woman's identity? Oh, well, at least she was already dead, I guess.
Yeah. They're like, oh, wait, did you kill her? And she's like, no. And they're like, all right, no further questions. Mystery solved. And I was like,
that's fine.
You're just going to trust her? You don't even know where her name is. She lied to you. Yeah.
Be better. See you later.
Fuck. So anyways, she's Dr. Ellen, real name unknown, who stole the life of a dead lady. Not going to worry about it. We find out that she had an affair with Garrett's character. Yeah, this is good. So he has an affair with the hippie lady whose name that we're never going to know and who maybe is a killer, but it's probably fine. It feels right.
It's on brand.
So at this point, so once we find out that Gare had an affair with this lady, all of a sudden Jake and Malachi are like, oh, maybe Gare like set all this up. He hired us like to as a smokescreen to like throw the blame somewhere else, and he's actually trying to kill his wife so he can be with hippie Dr. Ellen. And immediately I was like, well, look, I know that's not true, because when he plays evil, he has either a tie or he has a goatee, and he has neither a tie nor a goatee, so he's not evil in this.
See, I'm a detective, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Gare doesn't have a tie or a goatee. Not the killer. No, he's not a good guy killer. In this. Yeah. Is he wearing 17 layers? Good guy. That's how you know.
Yeah.
So I was like, Gare's not dressed like a bad guy, so it's not him. So be better detectives. I am a better detective than you guys. So we're like, okay, so we've got Dr. Ellen. We think briefly for like 12 seconds it's Gare, and then we're like, we know it's not Gare. So then we talk to Dr. Sullivan, and Dr. Sullivan's like, oh, like I knew he was having an affair, but like wild stallions gonna be wild stallions. I can't control that. And I was like, that's an enlightened way of looking at it, I guess. So she's like, yeah, I knew that they were having the affair, but I never said anything to Dr. Ellen. So Dr. Ellen doesn't know that I knew. And like, also, I could not give a shit. Like, whatever. Gare's gonna Gare, whatever. So we cross all that off the list. And so we go to Dr. William Ng, who Dr. Ellen was all like, talk therapy and like, let's just like let our emotions out. And Dr. William Ng is literally like, I'm going to stop you right there. I do not need to hear a single thought happening inside your head because I give no shits.
Yeah.
What drugs can I give you to make you go away? All the drugs? All the drugs. Okay. Let me just give you a sack of drugs, like in candy store. Fuck all the way off. It is like neither of these approaches. I'm like, was one of the writers like hurt by a psychiatrist? Because both of these are like, this is really fucked up. This is really messed up. This one episode has definitely set back like the mental health industry in Newfoundland by like 50 years. It is bad. It is not good. So he's like, can I just give you some kind of drug? So we find out like that he is developing some kind of a new drug that he wants to rush to market. But Dr. Sullivan was like, let's keep doing tests on these drugs. It's too early. And that's when I was like, I think both of us had the same reaction of like, you're not part of a pharmaceutical company. You're like one rando guy in bumfuck Newfoundland with like, a toilet and a dream. Like what kind of drugs are you making? And like, how is this sterile? And like, what is going on with the, like, I assume this is like I assume it's like a federally regulated thing making drugs. So like, what are you just like, this makes no, like, it's horrifying. It's like just that he's like making like toilet drugs. We don't even know what the drugs are for, just that they're some kind of brain drug that he's making like in his back room, and he wants to sell it right now to make lots of money. And I was like, okay, this is, there's a lot to unpack. There's more to unpack with you than there is with Dr. Ellen, the secret murderer. Like, okay. But anyways, he's mad at Dr. Sullivan because of the whole, she doesn't want him to sell messed up drugs out of the back of his van, basically. So we're like, oh, maybe he's the one trying to kill her. So then we find out that he is trying to stick an audio recorder in the back of Dr. Sullivan's car because he thinks he's going to get some information from her talking to herself in her car to try and blackmail her. And then Jake and Malachi make a pretty smart deduction. They're like, why would he drug her with his own drug and like immediately reveal himself as like the source of her being like just drugged out of her mind? Like, that doesn't make any sense that he would use his own drug to mess her up. Like, okay. So we're like, too obvious, not going to work. And also they make the point that he's like, I have no electrical skills. I have no like mechanical skills. How could I possibly be the one that like messed up the wall plug so that it would shoot out sparks and nearly kill her? Like, how does that, I couldn't do that if I wanted to. So it's not me.
Right.
Spoiler alert, the person who actually messed it up, we have no idea how she learned how to do that, and it's never touched on again. But like, Dr. William Ng is like, I am so bad at this, it definitely wasn't me. So we're like, okay, so it's not Dr. Ellen, it's not Gare, it's not Dr. William Ng. Then there's a guy, a patient, a former patient of Dr. Sullivan. His name is Joseph Otis. He is an ex-cop. They bring up the idea that like maybe it's her fault that he was fired as a police officer. Like he had something going on at work, and she interviewed him, and she made a recommendation that like he needs to be let go. He cannot be a cop anymore. It's too stressful. It's giving him PTSD or something. Later, we talked to the former cop. And he's like, no, I left because, like, I wanted to. Like, I quit on my own. I wasn't, like, told to leave. And he's like, and also, I am an electrician. So, like, I guess if you want to pick someone who has the skills to rig the outlet, like, it could have been me. But it's not me because, spoiler alert, I'm having an affair with Dr. Sullivan, and I have for years. And this is where Rachel and I were like, I mean, that's a choice. Not to say this is an ugly actor. He's not an ugly actor, but like you couldn't have picked like someone that was believable in any way for her to have like a years long affair with. Like, I just like, we walk in. Yeah. So the secretary for the whole psychiatric practice and Jake hear, so they're at the office sort of late at night. They hear like, and they walk in into. That's what they hear.
It was an accurate representation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Theater. So they walk in, they walk into Dr. Sullivan's office, and they see her on the couch, like straddling this guy. He has no shirt on. I think she's wearing something like a bra probably. And they're supposed to be having sex. And I was like, oh, I miss the days of Forever Night where like, I sort of believe that you guys were actually having some kind of an intimate moment as opposed to like, this sad couch, like one back arch and like a moan, and then she rolls up him and is like, oh no, I've been caught, oopsie. And I'm like, oh man, like give me something here to work with, give me something. But like, whatever. And he's like all scraggly and shit. Like the first like three times you meet him, he's like all twitchy, and he's like that guy that like loiters like at the edge of gatherings. Like you just kind of see him in the background in a bunch of scenes, and he's like all shifty-eyed and stuff.
Yeah. I think he's the guy... I think he plays a werewolf in Lost Girl.
I would believe that.
Yeah.
He has... he does look like the guy that they cast as a werewolf in every modern urban fantasy adaptation on television.
Yeah. He's like the love interest in Lost Girl.
The werewolf love interest. Good for you, dude, I guess. I don't buy it in this particular case because you're competing against Garrett Wynn Davies. But, like, you know, good Correct. For you. If you're a werewolf and there's no, let's say, vampire cops around, like, good for you, man. Good. Like, I just want to, like, tidy him up. He's, like, real messy. He's just too much. he doesn't fit neatly into the box. And, like, I need him to be clean. But anyways, so they're having their affair on the couch. The secretary, whose name is Cindy, so she sees this at the same time that Jake does, and that's bad news for you, Dr. Sullivan. dun, 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 because it turns out that Secretary Cindy is the one who has it out for you, because as this is a Garrett Wynn Davies guest starring episode, she is a human woman who is so deeply infatuated with Garrett that she's willing to murder. And I was like, yes.
Can we? Are we going to leave out the scrapbook where she's taking pictures?
We're getting there. I'm unfolding it like a beautiful flower, her craziness. At the end of the episode, the lady cop that Jake is into and, spoiler alert, will eventually marry. The lady cop is like, oh yeah, it turns out Cindy has erotomania. And I'm like, did you just diagnose her? Was she wearing like a button? Like, what did you?
Listen, if you can make drugs in the toilet, then a police officer can diagnose anybody they want to.
Well, how is this somehow less realistic than Forever Night? And I'm including the vampire dog episode in this.
See, that's why Forever Night gets a incorrect bad rap.
Who gives it a bad rap? I only hear people singing its praises or having no idea it exists, but...
I'm sure there's some people out there that are like, but isn't it a bad show? Like, no, it's just a 90s show.
Rude. I will fight them. Rude.
Yeah, come for me.
So Cindy, who maybe has erotomania, which I don't believe that's... I didn't look it up because I was mad. I refuse to believe that's a real thing. I refuse to look it up. But anyways, so Cindy has a copy of Gare's novel, which again is called Body Language, with the sexy cover. We see inside the front page, and he has inscribed it to her. And it's one of those, like, how would you describe it? Like, it's like a thanks for buying my book, whatever, yeah, like love you, Gare. With affection. Oh, is it a Forever Night callback? Yeah, did you just call us all the way back? But it is. That's a good callback, because it has the kind of vibe of, like, I can see him having written it as like general pleasantry, but I can see her reading it and through the lens of her crazy brain, looking at it and going, this means he loves me. This is a secret love note to me. Like, it's that kind of like that. I mean, I thought that the language of the note was good because I like you looking at it. I recognized that it was like it could go either way. It was like that kind of in between, like see what you want to see language. Yeah. And I was like, okay. So then we flip like one page over. And as a bookmark in this erotic novel, there are a bunch of photos that clearly were of the Garrett character and his wife, like, on vacation and hanging out and stuff. And Cindy has, like, physically cut out pictures of her own head and glued them onto the wife's head in every single picture. And then, like, stuck, like, little... It's like she went to a magazine and cut out, like, words, like exciting and fun and love and happy, and then just glued those words also on top of the pic. It is so messed up. And like, my favorite part is that there are some pictures where like the wife was clearly in like profile view and Cindy just like had like a full on like front facing view of her own face. So it's like, it looks even more messed up because it's like the face is like the wrong head on the wrong body. It's all like upside down and backwards and shit. But like, I didn't like it because it reminded me of in that like in the travel guide I made for you where I basically did the same thing. And I was like, I feel a little called out by this.
Comedically as a joke.
Oh no. I did it ironically. I don't have erotomania. That would be weird. Anyways.
Says the woman with the whole pot.
Yeah, it's no. Hey, you're here with me. We are here together.
Semi-voluntarily.
So the cease and desist letter should be sent to both of us. Okay,
that's true.
Both of us together. Yes.
Yeah, I will take equal responsibility litigiously.
I looked at the pictures and I was like, oh, that's I did that too. Okay, so. if anyone's wondering what we're talking about, please listen to the special Toronto episode of Come in 81 Kilo. Look at that. I also put a plug in there. Aren't you happy? Aren't you proud?
Yeah.
So anyways, so we see the novel that has been inscribed to Cindy. We see all the pictures with Cindy's face just fucking glued in there as a creepy stalker collage. And then earlier in the episode, when we first walk into the psychiatrist office, Cindy is at the front desk. She's already on the phone. And I thought this was actually good. Like, most of this episode is just hot garbage rolled up in a big diaper burrito. But like this, I thought was a good moment. They have, They have Cindy on the phone with Gare, with Gare's character. And Gare is saying something like, hey, Cindy, if I give you my credit card information, can you please order some flowers for my wife? Because she keeps getting poisoned and that bums me out and I want to get her some flowers. Yeah. When Cindy is talking to Gare on the phone, the first time I watched the episode, I was like, okay, this is just like background, whatever, so that she's on the phone when Jake comes in and then she'll be off the phone and we'll like get to the next scene. But when you actually listen to what's going on, she is so infatuated with him. Like that, even this conversation where he's telling her to buy flowers for someone else, like she comes off, like she already comes off as like, oh yeah, thank you, Professor Sullivan. Oh my God, of course, Professor Sullivan. Like, absolutely. Like, how can I blow you, Professor Sullivan? Like, just for flowers? Okay, yeah, just behind the building right now. Yeah, it's great. I was like, okay, like good. Like, this show could be good. Like, I like that you snuck in that little moment. Like, that was like nice foreshadowing. Why did the rest of the episode suck so fucking much? But okay, so we've got Cindy. We see her collage. We see her book. We're like, uh-oh, this isn't good. So we never find out how she gets keys to the drug cupboard. We never find out how she knew how to jack up the outlet. She's just real resourceful, I guess, and the show doesn't give a shit. So as soon as we find out that that she's the one who wants Dr. Sullivan dead because she wants to fuck Gare, we see Dr. Sullivan tied up in a chair, and Cindy is behind her with, as I said before, the biggest, most upsettingly phallic, like Atlantic under the ocean cable that I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's been cut in half and it's all jagged. And there's like the fakest fake electricity, like shooting at the end, like clearly like added in post, like somebody's nephew got his first job being like, oh, I'm going to just draw a little bit of lightning in here and add some like zip zap noises. So I'm like, okay, good job, guys. So she's standing there behind Professor Sullivan. Professor Sullivan, now that she's finally tied up to a chair with electrical cables to her head, finally believes that maybe there's some truth to somebody wanting her dead. And I'm like, okay, good. You're on the same page with us finally. You're in the same book as we are finally. Like, good job. And she's like freaking out. Gare is there, and Gare has to pretend to love Cindy, but like he doesn't like think of this plan. It's Dr. Sullivan, it's his wife, who has to be like, hey, tell her you don't love me anymore so that this crazy bitch will drop this giant deep sea trench cable and not electrocute me. Like, say the shit, like, come on, Gare. Like, you said you love a lady that, like, you didn't actually love. Like, just pull deep. You can do this for both of us. Like, just, like, make up some shit. So he's like, oh, shit, yeah, no, oh, yeah, Cindy. Yeah, no, Cindy, I fucking love you. Oh, my God, like, I'm gonna get a divorce from Dr. Sullivan. Oh, wait, she's having an affair. I had no idea. Like, oh, that's weird. It's not like I've had like multiple affairs, which I love how they like slip that in. It's not like the Gare character like had one affair and the wife character had one affair or whatever, or like their marriage is breaking apart. No, it's the Gare character has had multiple fucking affairs like this whole time. And then finally Dr. Sullivan has had one and it's like the love of her life. But Gare has clearly been like tomcatting around the university. And I'm just like, beautiful, beautiful. You've fleshed in this character. You've given me a person, like, thumbs up. I fucking love it. Good. No notes. So he's like, oh yeah, no, Cindy, no, I love you. And I'm going to divorce her. And like, we're going to run away together, Cindy. Like, it's going to be great. Like, just maybe put the cable down. Cause if you kill her and you go to prison, like, how is that going to work? Like, there's no conjugal visits. That would be a bummer. Right, Cindy? Cindy, who I love, right? So Cindy is like almost there with him. And then Gare says something like, you don't actually want to kill my wife, do you? And she's like, no, like, she's not your wife anymore. You love me. Like, the second he says wife, Cindy goes like full on crazy bitch. And she's like, ah! And she has like Hulk arms. I don't know how to describe it. She's got like one cable in her left hand and one broken cable in her right hand. And she's going to like go together towards Jennifer Sullivan, toward the Dr. Sullivan's face, and like electrocute her from both sides. She's like, argh! And then Jake like somehow manages to grab both cables and pull the woman towards him. Like, I'm going to electrocute myself instead of Dr. Sullivan. And this whole time, Malachi has gone around the back and he's pulled out the back of the cable, which again is the biggest fucking plug I've ever seen in my entire life.
He unplugs the house.
So she has her cable. She is going to kill Dr. Sullivan. Jake is like, I will sacrifice myself for fucking whatever reason. And then it turns out that Malachi has unplugged. Like you said, it's like the entire town was plugged in on one cable, like like a Christmas, a tiny Christmas town display. Like, it makes no sense. Yeah. So he's unplugged it, and then, like,
yeah,
okay, like, everything's all wrapped up, like, everything's figured out, and we all, like, that's our happy ending. And I was just like, with some of the stuff that we've watched, like, with Frankie Drake, I'm like, oh, this is cute. Like, I would give this a shot. I'd watch some more episodes. Like, there's other things that he's in. Like, when we get to Murdoch Mysteries, I liked Murdoch Mysteries. I thought that was cute. I would give that show a chance. It's run for, like, 17 seasons. I would give some of those seasons a chance. I don't have any desire to, like, ever watch Republic of Doyle ever again. And I feel bad. I feel bad for saying that because, like, the main actor seems personable and charming and, like, the idea of, like, the world's horniest Newfoundlander running a PI agency with his dad on, like, really cute. Like, it looks like it was filmed in Newfoundland or, like, some equivalent area. Like, it's very picturesque, like, the few times that you see outside. It seems really kind of cute and, like, nice. But, like, the show is so fucking boring. Even knowing that he's got, like, three women on the line, and that he's, like, solving crimes, and he's, like, maybe drunk half the time, and there's, like, a loan shark, and a mob boss, and, like, ex-husbands and ex-wives. Like, there's, like, so much going on where it's, like, oh, this should be sort of compelling, this should be interesting. Like, all this scary, dirty shit happening in, like, picturesque Newfoundland. I could not have given less of a shit. I was so fucking bored, except when it was Gare, and only because it felt like one of the writers was like, what if, hear me out, guys, what if we let Garrett Wyndavies be the stereotypical Garrett Wyndavies character, and we just, like, shook him up, and it was just, like, a woman is so horny for him that she's willing to, like, murder a whole town. Does that sound like fun? Yeah, let's do that. Like, that...
They're like, man, it's believable. Yeah.
This feels true to life.
Can we get Mr. Davies to sign off on that? Yes, we can get Mr. Davies to sign off.
I think he'd be into it. Yeah, I think. Can he? He will be into it if you let him wear all of his clothes. All of his clothes? Yeah. All of his clothes all at once. He will then be into it and he will do whatever you want. All right. Yeah, no, bring him on. Bring him on to Newfoundland.
Perfect. Let's do
this. Like, I like the scenes with him because they're like because they're the characteristics. But, like, everything else, yeah. I was sort of like, okay, like, you've got three suspects, like, who is it gonna be? Like, and the stuff that, like, they didn't give a shit about, like, the toilet drugs and the maybe murdered a psychiatrist character, I was like, no, let's go back to that shit. Like, you guys are really into, like, oh, there's a scary loan shark named, like, Big Fat Ronnie. I don't give a shit about Big Fat Ronnie. I give a shit about toilet drugs and the dead psychiatrist. Like, what? Fucking what? Why don't we care about that? Like, give me a whole episode on that. That would be compelling to watch, right? Like, if there was a whole episode about a psychiatric clinic, and then it turned out that one of the psychiatrists has been living a lie this entire time, and she's like killed the real psychiatrist, and she's like under the floorboards, and she's like trying to teach herself how to be a psychiatrist from like Psychiatry for Dummies books, like during the day, like during the nighttime. Like, that would be crazy. Like, I would watch the shit out of that. Like, that would be amazing. And like the other psychiatrist, like, brewing his toilet drugs and trying to, like, sell that out of the back of a van. Like, it's interesting, and it's so fucking weird that it just gives you pause. But, like, the show doesn't give a shit. The show's like, no, but he's sad because who's he gonna stick his dick in? And I was like, there's one guy whose dick I care about in the show. And you've already told me where he stuck that dick. And, like, okay, like, I'm done now. What are your thoughts on it? Like,
I know I wouldn't watch it because he had three women on the hook and all of them were super into him and all of them were, like, sad that they were in relationships with objectively other better men, but they weren't in a relationship with him. And so they were all, like, slyly trying to get back with him. And I didn't understand what the catch was. Like, what about the, is he hung like a horse? I don't get it. Like, why are we all wanting to go back to this guy? And then Gare was only in the beginning and the end. So I had to just deal with this wannabe Gare dude in the whole middle. And I never believed, if you put Gare in those shoes and he had three women that were like, oh, I'm with this 7-foot-tall doctor, but that guy's really hot. I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I'm here for this plot line. But I didn't get it for the Jack Doyle character. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch
that. Well, and, like, you brought up a good point. Like, it's weird. It's weird that, like, Doyle, that that Jake wanted to be with all three women, and all three women wanted to be with him. Like, it didn't feel like, you know, sometimes there's like, I feel like normally on a show, there's, it'll be a guy and then it'll be two girls. It'll be the one that he's with and is like fine, and then the one that he really actually would prefer to be with. And this was sort of like, he didn't know who he wanted to be with, but he kind of, he was settling on everyone. I would like to be with everyone.
Yeah.
Why can't I have everyone?
He just couldn't choose though.
Yeah.
They all want me.
Yeah. What a terrible conundrum to be in. I guess I'm going to be perma drunk and electrocute myself a bunch for comedy.
Yeah, I'll just unplug a house. It's fine.
The fucking cable.
It was like in a cartoon, like in a Warner Brothers cartoon, when like they need, like there's a big electrical something and they go and like pull the curtain back and there's a big plug and they pull the plug out. That's what it was. That's exactly what it felt like.
Yes. The whole thing definitely felt like a live action cartoon plus sex. And I was just like,
yeah,
okay. So, but I liked the Gare part. I thought the Gare part was like funny because it felt so knowing. It felt like such a knowing wink to like everything else he's ever done. So I feel like, I don't know. I don't remember what I gave Diamonds. I feel like a 4.5. I feel like maybe I like this more, that I screamed at it less than Diamonds. So I feel like maybe I'm going to give it 5 sloppy wet kisses out of 10. Mm. Like I wouldn't watch it again. I liked the Gare scenes. I thought the Gare scenes were funny. I might watch the Gare scenes again. And I liked that it was one of the few times when they like dress him well, because I feel like sometimes he's a guest star and they know he needs all the layers, but they don't know what layers to put on him. I was like, good job, costume shop. Those were good layers. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm going to do 3 raised eyebrows out of 5. It just feels, it felt like we got maybe even 2, because he was in it sparingly and he didn't make out with anybody. But we did get the one woman who fell madly in love with him because he simply existed. So,
which is the truest characteristic of all, I would argue.
Yeah. Yeah. Enough to like cut his face or cut her face out and glue it on photos. Like she had a scrapbook, like she had a serial killer scrapbook of him.
So horrifying.
And that just feels like, that feels on brand. And so I think maybe I'm going to go 3 raised eyebrows out of 5. Because it was all about, like, this guy is literally so hot, a woman would murder to be with him.
I appreciate that we managed to have an episode where, like, the core nugget of the whole episode was the truest, purest characteristic of all, where he's barely in the episode at all. Like, I just, bravo. Bravo for, like, infecting this episode with the most characteristic. And then not even having to act. Yeah. Just being like, I'm going to go get a drink and I'll see you guys in like 2 days. I'll come back and I'm going to hang out in Newfoundland. Yeah, I'm going to like meet the locals.
I'll show up and tell somebody I love them. Not a problem.
I got this.
Be back later. I got this. No, I don't need to practice. It's fine. No.
I've been preparing my whole life for this role. I got it.
I love everyone I meet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a shout out to the soon to be made Patreon special.
Playgirl.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Is your husband Matt still in the room? Is he still amongst us? Is Matt still with us?
Is Matt still with us?
I am still with you.
Excellent. So perhaps for the Patreon special, where we discuss the Playgirl issue that Gare did an interview in, I really think we need a man's input and a man's deep baritone voice to really give the gravitas to the interview. So perhaps you might grace us with a dramatic reading for that episode. Matt, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure.
Begrudging acceptance. I like it. That's the vibe that we go for here, and Gare can get it.
He's all about it. He's smiling. He's so looking forward to it.
I mean, we have both the physical copy and the digital copy. So really, whatever's most convenient for you. Multiple copies of pornography for research. For the hard-hitting research that we do here on Gare Can Get It. You're welcome. You're welcome, audience. Well, until next time, unless and until we get a cease and desist letter.
Nobody remind him.
No, nobody. Remember our tagline. Nobody tell him.
Don't be a
Bye.
Bye.